Oh shit, here we go again.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Yes, hello everyone. We are a couple minutes late, but what you gonna do? It's a live show and stuff happens. We are the Godfathers of Podcasting. And we are broadcasting live on Thursday, February the 10th. It is 6:33 Eastern Standard Time. And in case you didn't know, we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show, as always, are available on all major podcast providers, including Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, and dozens more. Video archives of this show, as always, are only available on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. You can send us a text message right now by your standard text messaging app or on WhatsApp. The phone number is 437-375-2000. If you have a question or a comment, you want to talk to our guest, hit us up. If you got a good take, we'll read it on the air. If it's a bad take, we'll read it on the air and make fun of you. My name is Donnie DeSilva, and it is my pleasure to introduce the Simon and Theodore to my Alvin, Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell, and my bro Danny O.
What's up, Alvin?
I was going to wait for the DJ to, like, you know, bring the fucking run the beat tunes. Down.
Just play tunes all night? Just
run the tunes, guy.
sounds like you got some new toys there, Donnie. There was some extra verbiage going on at the beginning there. Not the usual like run in, right?
I mean, we've been playing with some stuff, some technology. Right?
Just, like, oh no! This week. Oh, now we're the morning fucking zoo, apparently.
Yeah, that's great. What's up, kids.
Wow, unbelievable! Who let you in charge of the fucking new toys? By the way.
I mean, there was nobody to stop me. The only thing that you're upset about is that you don't have the new toy. Just be honest.
I mean, it would just turn into a battle. Could you imagine if all three of us just got all the same stuff?
Oh, back in the old days when Dan and I were doing a show, Dan would have the keyboard with all the sound effects and he would just sit there jamming like he was producing a song.
Yeah, I feel like I would just break it now. Like, my technology curse is such that, you know, I know it wouldn't be a keyboard. Everything is touch screen.
Tell us your sad story, Dan.
And what would happen is I would touch the screen. The screen would crack slowly at first, but then break out into a huge explosion, shards of glass in my eye.
My favorite part is that Donnie's going to go through his complete load in this one show.
Yeah,
he's just going to unload. Yeah, right.
Am I right? Like, you have a touchscreen gimmick. Yeah, there?
He just got into a fucking elevator and hit every fucking button this week.
I'm saying you don't have a keyboard, right? It's like a touchscreen
deal.
No,
I got one.
Exactly.
Of these,
that's what I said. Technology. Yeah. I would not be able to work with it. Give me some old school keys.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us as we screw around with technology and just try to have some fun. The phone number's up on the screen, 437-375-2000. Right off the hop, I gotta share this with y'all because, I don't know, maybe I'm nuts. I found this hilarious. We got a text message. I guess it was on the weekend. We weren't on air. And someone sent us a message. Let me just pull it up. I have it here. Oh, here it is. Okay. I love your show, but Donnie, enough hating on the Freedom Convoy on Instagram. Even Dan has a song out supporting it. Get on the bandwagon, man.
What? How did he find out?
Y'all don't know about my Freedom Convoy song?
So Dan has he's part of a new project, the Freedom Marching Project. And apparently, if you put the word freedom in anything right now, then you're part of the right-wing nut job clan.
No, see, that's the wrong project. I have a record called Keep Motherfucking Trucking. And that's what I'm all about. I'm all about trucks and convoys, blowing horns, keeping people up at night. I'm on that side of the story. Yeah, no, that's hilarious.
I feel like
you couldn't possibly be any more wrong Moron.
I feel like the people watching the clown boy just
love it.
Aren't actually listening to the music. Or if they did listen to it and they can't understand it because your black scent is so heavy. That's a new thing nowadays, right?
Black scent.
Wow, is that your transition to the next topic? Holy shit.
You transitioned too early. I wanted to.
Yeah, we weren't done with this
address.
One.
Yeah, you were.
Well, listen, whoever you are, give respect where it's due. The Freedom Marching Project is an EP put together by over 50 Canadian artists, all standing. They're called the United Artists for Change. I'm very proud to be part of the United Artists for Change because this EP, both music videos and, of course, the songs, all are in support of equality. It is against anti-Black violence and racism. And if you missed that, you literally didn't pay any attention whatsoever to the Freedom Marching Project song, music videos, or website. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to freedommarching.com. You can sign up for the newsletter to get any and all information about the movement. It's not just about the music. It's not just about the music videos, but it is about a movement to bring about more awareness and, of course, equality amongst the races, because, again, we continue to fight for equality. And especially this being Black History Month, you should know that Daniel's not doing any songs about the fucking convoy.
I would go so far as to say that the person just saw the title and assumed, did not even push play to try to figure shit out. And that is the perfect example of how
you hit it.
And fucking clickbaits and bad headlines have lured and grifted that entire sect of human into this ideology that they've all adopted for some whatever reason. Remember, folks, not that long ago, the anti-vax people saying, oh, don't shut down the country, keep it all open because of mandates, right? And now it's the trucker saying we're shutting down the country because of mandates. What do you really want? This has nothing to do with vaccines or mandates. It's a clear disruption of democracy and the way that things are run in civilized countries. Sorry if you don't like it, but you're just going to have to deal with it. Get out and vote, people. That's what we do.
I love the people that are saying the trucker convoy is all about freedom of choice. And then one of the heads,
you're right,
one of the heads of the organization was celebrating last week when they're let's call it what it is. It's not a protest. It's an occupation. Their occupation blocked off a vaccine clinic in Ottawa, and they were boasting on Twitter about how that vaccine had to shut down. We did it. We shut them down. Wait a minute. What's this about? Is it about freedom of choice or stopping a vaccine? Make up your mind.
If it was about freedom of choice, they would allow people to have the freedom to get the vaccine if they chose to. Imagine some Black people do some shit like that. Imagine that's what the protest was. We're going to occupy government grounds and stay our ass here for days, causing havoc for days. You can't have a day of protest without cops showing up and doing some shit. But these trucker motherfuckers, that's the name of my song. Go and download it now. I'm sorry. Stream it on Spotify, you idiot. They're just there. And again, I would love for these people who are fighting on behalf of freedom to show up at the pro-choice rallies, because I know they're not there. So you want freedom of choice, but only the things that you want to have happen. See, because when people want to choose that, well, let's not talk about abortion when it comes to freedom of choice. Y'all niggas need to pick the fence that you're siding on, because y'all don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Our friend, friend of the show, Michelle Shaughnessy, is in Ottawa this week. She's out there with her husband.
Is she one of them?
She is not one of them, but she is performing. She's been sending me footage of what's been going on over there. And she was at a club last night headlining at Absolute Comedy. She had a great line at her show. It was, I'm from Toronto, but I feel really sexy in Ottawa. Every time I walk down the street, people are honking at me.
Oh, it gets, huh? Atta girl, Michelle. It's unbelievable how they think that, like, where were they a year ago? when everything was tell you now, what, all of a sudden, now all I'll of a sudden it's everybody has listed in the last couple of months what the plan is to ease off restrictions and have everything back open by a certain date, just like they've said from the beginning that there is an end plan to this. We just have to get to it, and these knuckleheads have been muddling up the waters along the way. So, but now all of a sudden that we're getting closer to the end game, they want to come in like what and shoot a quick three and think that they fucking, you know, drop 60.
I'll tell you where these guys were a year ago. W. Brett Wilson, formerly known as the philanthropic social justice dragon on Dragon's Den. He was everyone's favorite young dragon, always extending an olive branch to those, you know, charities and not charities, okay, but businesses that were donating and all that sort of shit. So he tweeted this week, "Dearest at Ottawa police, please fuck off and leave the anti-Trudeau convoy alone." Okay. 1 year ago, no, excuse me, 2020, during the BLM protests.
Never.
The date confirms exactly when this was happening. He tweeted, "Protesters have been given due notice that they are illegally, not to mention immorally, trespassing. Ignore hypocrisy and stupidity. Canadian enforcement should now," and he gives multiple choice. And it says, "serious fines, month of jail time, pepper spray, or all above as needed." So fuck off, Ottawa police. Leave the Trudeau haters alone. But BLM people, go to jail.
It never ends. I can't decide which of the things pisses me off more, because it's just layers and layers and layers of idiotic fuckery with these people using such words as freedom and choice and these things that they land light on the ears because it makes sense to want there to be freedom and freedom of choice and these things. But you skew these words into manipulating the idea that what you're doing has anything to do with positivity. And it also incenses me that you could, as Donnie's text message buddy over there has proven, that you can use these words so much that you will misconstrue the messages of other actual movements. Right. And you will say the same exact things about BLM and all of this kind of stuff that you will about anything else you don't agree with. But when it comes to the stuff that you do agree with, your language changes, and you think that we're too stupid to understand that you pick sides and you're not blatantly, completely biased, and in many cases, racist and prejudiced against specific causes. It is amazing that in that tweet that you read there, Don, that violence is one of the suggestions he lists there. People have no problem suggesting violence against BLM protesters, the very thing that BLM protests against. You have no problem asking for law enforcement. That's when you're on law enforcement side. That's when they're your buddies. But now they need to fuck off. And apparently they need to fuck off on
bitch.
January 6th and all the things that, as long as your cause is you know, something you want to stand up for, then law enforcement, violence, like, all those things have to go away and be ignored. It is amazing that you think we're too stupid to not realize what you're really doing and what you're really about. You're showing your ass out there.
Switching gears, because Tid teed this one up already, and it feels like an hour ago. Awkwafina. Tid, you want to talk about what Awkwafina is making headlines for? Like, it's always the wrong reasons. Unless it's Chung Lee, she's always in the news for the wrong reasons.
So apparently she is being, not apparently, she is being called out for using her in the past with some of her comedy stuff using a black scent. If you watched her character in Crazy Rich Asians, right? I believe it was, right? She plays an Asian girl who's very into hip hop. Now,
right,
her in her real life, rapper, I think she is, exactly. So it begs my question.
The black scent's fine.
It's not a matter. See, this is my question to you, to both of you, like, because I know what neighborhood I grew up in, And I know how the neighborhood dynamic was with the language inside of that neighborhood. And if you didn't fall into play with the people in your neighborhood as a kid, you didn't have any fucking friends. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like your neighborhood was your closest thing. You'd go out on the streets. And so it was just kind of a thing. She's a New York girl who grew up, what is it, Brooklyn or the Bronx or something like that. So I'm, you know what I mean? Is this really like what we're going to hang our hats on right now is whether or not she's saying things like
this is a tough one for me because growing up a super hip hop head, some of my earliest influences were like the Beastie Boys and Third Bass.
And this is what I was going to say. Third Bass, know, like right
they're,
there.
They're,
like,
they're white / Jewish rappers, all from New York, Brooklyn. And so they're going to have Brooklyn accents. They're also going to have hip hop appeal. Like I remember being a kid and listening to hip hop. And I, as a Canadian, a Toronto born person, starting to use words like dope, funky, fresh and deaf. And this, you know, the type of hip hop vernacular that was part of, you know, being part of that culture and then writing raps with such words in it. To be fair, I personally haven't heard much of Awkwafina's material. Some I have. I obviously know that she's a rapper and is into this hip hop culture. And hip hop has never excluded, while it is Black culture or Black art, it has never excluded anyone from being part. It's worldwide, and you got white, Black, brown, Asian, everyone, rappers, B-boys, DJs, etc. So from this standpoint, I don't know if Awkwafina is putting on a Black scent by way of trying to mimic Blacks, or is she embracing the culture and has she always, as you said, because she's grown up in an area and in a community where it's multicultural. We have a, you know, a hip hop landscape that which we communicate, which is exactly what she does through her music. So it makes me wonder, like, what we have going on in our world is there's so much divisiveness and hate and people doing this, that, and the third. I just heard that Adele is under fire for praising the fact that she's a proud woman when she won an Artist of the Year award. You haven't heard this, Don? So that's here's some information. Apparently that's bad because they changed Best Male Artist and Best Female Artist to one award, Artist of the Year. And in acknowledging that they've changed the name of the award, Adele said, I'm still a proud woman. I'm a proud female artist. And people are coming. She's come under fire for this idea that she's genderizing the award. And it's like, at what point do you just have to stop and go, y'all are on some fuck shit?
This is where left wingers are fucking stupid.
Agreed.
And I cannot support this level of cancel culture is so mentally moronic.
So I'm in full agreement with you, Don, which is why, based on what I don't know, is Awkwafina just one of the victims of cancel culture when really she hasn't been disrespecting, she's been honoring. It's I don't know the answer to that. And I wonder, I would love to know the material as like, you know, last when we talked about Joe Rogan, when I see the material, I get to be able, you know, I'm saying to make a determination as to what I think about it. I don't know what she's done within her material that suggests that's what she's doing. Cause I liked her. She's a good actor too. I like the stuff that the work that she's done. So
song about her vagina, man. That's all.
So I don't know if that is, because when I heard the Adele thing, I thought between Adele, Awkwafina, the way they came down on Dave Chappelle, I'm like, man, let's just like everyone's good. Everyone's getting it. And do they deserve it?
Okay. So since we're talking hip hop, let's transition for a second, because this weekend on Sunday, we have the Super Bowl, and much more important than the game, because the wrong teams are in it. So much more important than the game is the halftime show. Yeah. Gen Xers are about to put their fist up and go, what is up? And man, I am so, I'm so hyped for this show. Who do we have?
This is back.
Let's run down the lineup, guys. Who's performing this weekend?
Well, I thought you were going to run the beat. Well,
not enough. Then we get sued.
Yeah, I was going to say. So you got Dr. Dre heading up this incredible lineup that includes Snoop Dogg, Kendrick Lamar, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, It's those five. Am I missing anybody?
Yeah, no, that's it. So yeah. far. We so don't know about any surprises.
Well, that's
we
the thing.
We don't know about even, any surprises.
Yeah, Tid and I were talking right before the show about the possibilities of a Tupac hologram and God knows what else. Maybe a thousand stands jumping on stage as he performs that song. So I don't know how you pack all that in to – I think, Tid, you were saying it's going to be half an hour this year.
Yeah, I think the halftime
is
show.
Is that going to
be a half hour?
So it should
like
be.
It's usually only like 15 minutes, right? But
It'll be insane. I know that much because that's a lot of superstar in one show, one halftime show.
All right, let's try to guess the set list.
Well, I think that's
everyone's got to play their biggest shit, right?
There's some that's so just automatic. Still, DRE is happening, and I think next.
So hold on before the set list. Who do you? What's the lineup?
The lineup.
How do you do it? Who comes? Dre is out there first, right? He's the centerpiece of this whole thing.
Right.
Who does he bring out first? I know who I think he brings out first. Who that? Snoop.
Yeah, you got to have Snoop on the whole time, man.
I think Snoop.
And that's why I think that song you just played between that next episode and probably nothing but a G thing, it's going down.
And then who's next?
You got to have that middle portion. I mean, Kendrick is one of my favorite rappers, but I think he comes out.
I think that's where he comes out.
Yeah.
No, I think that's where Kendrick comes out.
They're saving Eminem, I think.
Yeah, they do that. What is Recipes or is that this? Is that the song that they did together?
I don't know.
They did something together because that's the common tie is Dre doing these songs together, right?
But here's my prediction. Material.
My prediction is Snoop starts it. Dre joins him.
Okay.
Marshall Mathers comes out next, and they drop a What About Dre.
Okay.
You forgot about Dre, right?
Forgot about Dre, yeah.
Yeah. And then Mary J. And then the heavy hitter will be Kendrick Lamar to close it.
I'm surprised you think that. I think Kendrick Lamar, as talented as he is, and he's, like I said, he's one of my favorites. I think he's sort of in the spectrum of this. He's been the artist who's been out the shortest amount of time amongst all of them. And is they've passed the torch to some degree to him, but I don't see him being that cleanup guy.
The reason I say that is because I think he probably has the most amount of recent appeal to some of the younger fans.
It's possible. Sure. I'm thinking so too.
Keep him out there longer.
Right.
I'm thinking you keep him out there longer. So you bring him out second. He does his hit, and then he can be the hype guy there with the rest of it going on. I'm thinking then after that, then you bring out Eminem. Then I was just thinking about this because before, like we were talking, I was like, no, you bring out Mary first. But then I'm thinking maybe you bring out Mary last and you finish it off with Family Affair.
This is a tough one, I'll be honest, because you're trying to squeeze in a whole lot in half an hour. But I think I don't know, man. I think there's a certain bang you got to go out with that involves.
So it'd be M and Dre. So then you forgot about Dre.
But at the same time, if they're expanding the length of the show, if it's going from 15 minutes to 30, is it possible that we get five mini concerts? Like everyone just does two songs on their own.
They're going to do some of their solo shit, unquestionably.
Yeah. Two or three songs, like one part of the stage gets lit and then they're on and then they're off. And then we focus on someone else and then we focus on someone else and then we'll do some collabs and then some collabs.
How much do you guys know about what needs to be passed by the NFL or the Super Bowl organizers for this? Because
everything.
Really? So we won't see Colin even Kaepernick Janet's come titty. Out?
What you won't even see is a whole lot of like high volume on any live mics.
Sure.
Like they give a live mic.
I want them to make a statement. I want them to make a statement that makes so many racist NFL fans mad. I want them to take a knee. I want Colin Kaepernick somehow involved, or maybe they're in his jersey. I don't know. I don't know. I just think it sounds like the most appropriate. This is, we're talking about NWA's Dr. Dre. You know what I mean? Like there's, we went from Straight out of Compton, but you're doing the 2022 Super Bowl. You have to, I don't know. That's my prediction is something controversial.
Can we pull off a hologram this year? Can we pull off a Tupac hologram doing California Love?
I'd like to see Fuck the Police.
Surprise, motherfucker.
You know what I mean? I don't think you're going to see Fuck the Police.
No, I know. The hologram with Tupac, the California Love is almost a must, especially it's in LA and everything. That'd be incredible.
So I don't know if you guys heard this or not. So they're doing rehearsals.
Yeah.
Right. They're doing rehearsals, getting ready. And apparently the stadium itself, right, has been blaring music to the outside. Like, so that you can't hear what's going on the inside of the stadium.
Is that right?
And they've been blaring like Bon Jovi and shit at like crazy decibels during when they're inside rehearsing this stuff. So, I mean, they're keeping it pretty hush hush so far. It's interesting because, you know, it's a prop bet. You absolutely know it's prop. Yeah, bet, right?
It's a win for hip hop, though, man. I'm happy to see it because, to my recollection, there hasn't been a hip hop artist, let alone five big names like that, performing at the halftime. And I do like this idea because, unlike when you have the one artist every year and you know who that one artist is, and yeah, they might come out with a surprise and usually they'll have somebody, to have five artists, it inspires conversations like this because there's such a such a long list of songs that could be part first, second, third, who's going to come up. I love this whole concept. It just like, it's just hope is like a celebration of hip hop and even LA, because it's there that they really turn this whole idea of them not, so, you know, everyone who hated on this happening, they turned it into something really special.
And you heard that like Snoop's got a new album coming out.
Always
this
does.
Friday. Right.
Oh, is this right?
And he just bought Death Row Records.
Oh yeah, I heard.
Right?
Wow.
So I mean, Donnie's still muted over there, so it's a good thing he's shaking his head. But yeah, Snoop bought Death Row Records, so the timing couldn't be more perfect for him to promote, you know, his new acquisition. I can say they're kind of lucky that it isn't the LA Raiders. If they were still, you know what I mean? Could you imagine if this was a Raider Nation and you had Dre and Snoop playing the halftime show?
I know. That's true, man. Oof. It's almost too bad. It was all about the Raiders. Even I rocked LA Raiders gear, bro.
You know what I'm saying? You probably didn't even watch football then. You just rocked the gear, right?
Just rocked the gear. Oh, 100%. Yep. That's all it was. Had the jacket, t-shirts, think hats.
Does Dan even know who's in the Super Bowl?
Yes, I do.
Who?
The Goats and the Tigers. Not far off. Rams and Bengals. I was right. I think I don't know who's in the Super Bowl. What's your Super Bowl predictions? Do you even care?
Who's quarterbacks?
Since you guys are crying that it's not Eagles versus Niners.
He has no clue who the quarterbacks are.
Who the quarterbacks are in the okay. We got
he wasn't gonna ask me this, but here we are, so fuck your hat. What is your answer, Dan? Answer, Dan. What's your motherfucking answer, Dan?
Well, Brady's retired. So not him. wake me up during the halftime show, y'all.
That's amazing. What, Donnie, because I know that, again, you're still muted. What is your pick for the Super Bowl game this year? I'll just kind of drag it out until you become unmuted there. Hi.
Sorry, I'm trying to get a hold of our guest.
I know you are. Late. I know you are.
That's
why I put you on the spot like that.
Yeah.
Thanks. Appreciate. I am thinking that the Rams are going to pick this one up. And I think the main reason I say that is because I think that, I mean, the home crowd is definitely going to play a factor. The home field, all of those factors, I think are huge. I also just think like, I think the Bengals are kind of just happy to be there. You know, I know that sounds weird because it's the Super Bowl. I feel like if the Chiefs had gotten through, this would be a much more compelling game. I know the Bengals are a good team. They won their division. They're not pushovers. I just see this being one of the lesser competitive games that we've had in the Super Bowl for a while.
I personally think it's going to be a more competitive game. I don't think that you can stop a guy like Ja'Marr Chase is on fire. He is a rookie.
Totally.
On absolute fire. Joe Mixon is unstoppable right now. And Burrow, as a rookie, you have to you have to get behind a kid like that. He's doing great things. Now on the other side, I mean, you've got vets like Von Miller and OBJ and Stafford.
Stafford.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. Where did Stafford used to play again, Dan?
Oh man.
That's right. Detroit. Yeah. Detroit.
The Lions.
Yeah. Yes. Same places Eminem is from. So
there you go.
You know, that these going to end up in LA doing this thing. I think it's going to be a lot more competitive game than people are giving it credit for. And I look forward to it. The way that the playoffs have played up to this Super Bowl with last minute heroics, you know what I mean? Throughout, like, you couldn't ask for a better ending to an NFL season than, like, let's hope that this isn't a complete blowout. I'd love for this to go down in history as being the first game to go to overtime and end in a tie. That would be fan fucking tastic in my book.
Wait, can that happen?
Yeah, football games can end in a tie, bro.
But the Super Bowl?
I mean, has it ever come down to it? Who fucking knows?
You're telling me they would end the Super Bowl in a tie? There's no way.
What are you supposed to do? Just keep playing and playing and playing?
I have no idea. What is overtime rules in football?
Well, so overtime rules, as it is right now, they start with another coin toss.
Okay. Right.
And so the winner of the coin toss can either accept or defer. Usually you want to accept, because if you score if you get down and you score a field goal, the other team gets a chance to go back. If you go down and you score a touchdown, that's it. The other team doesn't even get a fucking chance. So it's kind of like what happened with that Buffalo Kansas City game. Buffalo didn't even get a chance to return, right? After the overtime. Going into the overtime, because Kansas City went down there, scored. That was the end of the game, right? So all that they did really was they lost the coin flip. You know what I mean?
That's
kind of overtime rules is kind of a fucking
a mess. Weird thing. But of all games,
it happened in a playoff game. Can it happen in a Super Bowl?
But that's the thing. You tell me a playoff game ended in a tie. That's not what you're saying.
No. But I'm saying,
regular
season games can end in tie.
I feel you. Yeah, no, that would be. I can only imagine. It's like it was a tie. We're gonna share it,
right? Could you imagine that? Well, because there's a betting line on it. There is a betting line on it
that will the end of regulation will be a tie. You can end bet on that.
Tie. I think it's like +2,000.
I can't. How? Like I can't imagine that being possible. Super Bowl.
Has there ever been?
I remember
has
when
there ever been. I don't have the ability to look here because all of my devices, but somebody look it
Super
up.
Super Bowl ending in a tie.
Has there ever been a Super Bowl ending in a tie, or has there ever been a double overtime in a Super Bowl? I don't think there has.
Has a Super Bowl ever ended in a tie? I'm going to find out right now on the spot, bro. I'm going to go with no, because that has to be. Yes.
Okay.
A grand total of one Super Bowl has ended in a tie at the end of the fourth quarter, which was the New England-Atlanta matchup. It means, however, the game goes into overtime following whatever the prevailing rules of the day are for overtime. So wait a minute. So then tell me, what happened in that game?
Somebody won in overtime.
I'm reading some other answer. Answer is no. Continuous overtime until there's a winner. That's the only one that makes sense to me.
Continuous. Yeah, there'd have to be. So could you imagine if you went like four overtimes in football? Because, I mean, we've seen it in baseball where they go, 97.
Games. That's the crazy thing. It's interesting because I don't know if this is just going to be a COVID rule and maybe COVID stays forever. But, in baseball, they started doing, in the extra innings, they start a runner on second base. So they don't have those 20 inning games anymore. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Is it Little League?
It sounds like a Little League rule. It's like it's the 10th inning and they have a designated runner on second already with no outs.
Is that so they make sure that everybody gets a chance to play?
It's really weird, dude.
I don't understand a lot of these extra time rules.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm finding different answers, man. Most people that I'm finding this answer from say, no, cannon in a tie, you got to play continuous overtime. I want to know about this New England-Atlanta game, though, because when was that? Do you have any ideas? Football expert.
No, I'm not a trivia guy like that, especially for, because if it was New England and Atlanta, it was probably when Brady was playing. So, I mean, who, I don't know who the quarterback would have been for Atlanta at the time. Maybe, fuck, I don't know. Maybe Michael Vick.
Yeah, I think it was, it says, let's see, 2017. So it looks like it ended in a tie during regulation. This game did not end in a tie. New England ended up winning that Super Bowl against the Falcons in 2017. So, yeah. So it ended.
Who's quarterback?
Is that Brady? Isn't it? I know football more than it. Yeah.
You're allowed to use your devices right now.
That's fantastic. Man, let me tell you, bro. I be using Google in like conversations all the time. It's like, oh yeah, where did you get that from? And
are you gonna watch the Super Bowl? Time.
Sure. Yeah, I usually do. Yeah that's usually a hangout. A little.
Are you gonna make like a big like one man spread, or just have like open up like a TV dinner or some bullshit? Like, what is Danny TV O gonna do? Like, do you have like a group of brethren over to do Super Bowl?
I remember years ago when I was hanging with my lady at the time, we watched the Super Bowl together, and she put out this spread, and I'm like, yo, what kind of influence do I have on this? Is the healthiest Super Bowl spread I'd ever seen in my life. It's celery, carrots, and all this stuff. I was like, yo, are we gonna enjoy this game? Like, it's cool, it's the Super Bowl. It was good, but it was just like, it was the healthiest spread of all time. So yeah, I don't have no go-to Super Bowl food. What about you? You must have like, you must, that must be a day. Is that a Christmas for you, the Super Bowl?
Not really. I mean if
no Eagles,
you know,
no fun.
It was four years ago, because you know the Eagles were in the Super Bowl and and they beat Tom Brady. I'm just saying.
I'm all
so you know, so, but yeah, no, I watch the Super Bowl, and I'll usually put on a big old pot of like green chili or something like that. You know, yeah, maybe make one of those like buffalo blue cheese chicken dip gimmicks. They're pretty good too.
That sounds very Super Bowl-y.
As far as doing like, you know, chicken wings and nachos and all of that other happy horse shit, we get a little bit classier than that. Maybe we do like some little tiny fucking homemade meat Twinkies. You know what I mean? Those are always good, right?
Meat Twinkies. I know what you mean, but that's
corn dogs. Hilarious.
Of course.
Corn dogs. That's just a meat Twinkie, right?
That sounds so much better, a meat Twinkie. There's way too much innuendo you could run into. What you call it,
saying, right?
Pre-COVID, were you running Super Bowl parties?
We'd get together with a few of the boys and stuff like that, and do some stuff. But it'll probably just, you know, be a quiet one.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I don't know what's going on, but our guest was supposed to join us 10 minutes ago, and I can't get a hold of him. I spoke to him earlier today. He was all good to go. It's possible he lost track of time while getting ready to head down to the basketball game tonight, because I know he's heading down to the game in Houston.
I think this kind of disappointing. I think this is the first Godfathers of podcasting history.
Yeah, we've never had this happen before. I'm a little disappointed, a lot disappointed.
Yeah.
We did our best.
We did a whole Super Bowl gag.
I see.
hope y'all had fun with that.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. Fans. I guess what we can do is
continue on with the show.
Well, I guess we had a whole nice big chunk that was set up for our guest, and unfortunately, he's not here now. So.
So let me ask you this question then, because we're talking about the guest, and because we're talking about a question that we were going to actually have for the guest, and it doesn't look like the guest is going to be joining us. And while we were on the topic of the Super Bowl, and then we brought up the point of like not going into so many overtimes or anything like that, because we see that in baseball all the time, another sport. Let me ask this question, because apparently this is huge news going to another sport, the sport of basketball, that we do sometimes often talk about on this show.
Sometimes often.
Huge trade, Donnie.
That's funny.
You heard about this. This was a 1-for-3 trade with Harden for, who was it? Ben Simmons.
Has that trade been Curry?
It was actually Curry. James Harden and the corpse of Paul Millsap. They both went to the 76ers.
It would have been better off with Ronnie Millsap.
Oh, so the trade did happen.
It happened. James Harden and Paul Millsap went to the 76ers for Ben Simmons, Andre Drummond, Seth Curry, and 2 first round draft picks.
Wow.
So this whole thing backfired for the 76ers, who have been holding out all year on trading Ben Simmons, saying that the price is not going down.
Right.
And then they realized, well, we got to get something for him. So they did get the best player in the deal. They got James Harden.
Right.
But this is now really looking bad on James Harden. This is twice in a 13-month span. He has forced his way out of a team to go to another team. He forced his way out of Houston because he wanted to go to Brooklyn.
Right.
And he didn't like Brooklyn anymore, and he forced his way out. And the only team he could go to was Philadelphia, because you have to match contract value. And
that's right.
Nobody else really had a big enough contract chip that they were willing to trade, other than Philly, with that massive max deal of Ben Simmons, who's been sitting at home all year doing nothing. So it's a huge, huge trade. The Nets have just lost 8 or 9 in a row. Like, they are really falling apart. Yes, Kevin Durant has been injured. Kyrie Irving only plays some of their games. And Harden was apparently pissed off with the special treatment for Kyrie Irving. He was pissed off with Kyrie's attitude, wasn't happy about the whole situation, wanted to get the hell out. The crazy thing for me, though, is, yes, they get 2 first-round picks. But let's not forget, Philadelphia is a really good team. So those are going to be very late, late picks. So, okay, whatever. Seth Curry, a hell of a shooter, and he will fill the hole left by Joe Harris, who has been injured for most of the season. Andre Drummond, though, he's almost like a throw-in in this deal. Last year, Andre Drummond was like a $20 million player, but nobody signed him. So Philadelphia got him in the offseason on a minimum contract. He's making like $1.7, $1.8 million. So he's a throw-in in this deal. And Andre Drummond, playing off the bench this year behind Joel Embiid, has been a beast in limited minutes. He's getting double-doubles, and he's the first player since Charles Barkley for the 76ers to have 25 rebounds in a single game. And now the Nets finally have a center. Like, the Nets have their starting center. Andre Drummond's not going to be on the bench anymore. He's going to be the starting center for the Brooklyn Nets. So there's still a lot of conjecture about Ben Simmons and how soon he's going to play. He says he's excited, but he also says he's meeting with his therapist in order to get himself ready to play.
Yeah, I was just going to actually ask you. Right. I was just actually going to ask you, is this trade even about Ben Simmons at all? Because everything that you just... Yeah, but it still is. You got a guy who hasn't played all year. Now you're talking about the fact that they have a new starting center, and there's other pieces, obviously, that are involved in this trade that's going to help bolster a team that's on this really bad losing streak. I understand the contract issues, and you just don't take on Ben Simmons to not have him play. I understand that. But it seems like there's a even bigger picture here, because is it the worst case scenario, the possibility that Ben's still not ready to play?
I think he's going to play. I think this whole holdout has been ill-advised to begin with. One of the biggest problems, they have lots of problems. One of the biggest problems the Nets have had all year and last year is their defense is atrocious. Well, Ben is an all-world defensive player.
Yeah,
of course, he can't do it by himself.
Right.
But then there's also the question of, you put Ben on the Nets, what position does he play? Right? He's always been a point guard and been hesitant to play any other position. If they didn't acquire Drummond, the perfect thing would have been convert Ben Simmons to a center. He's 6'10", 6'11". He can't shoot.
Yeah.
But he's an epic passer. Turn him into a point center, you know? But they got Drummond. So then you're like, okay, I guess he'll play point guard. Oh, wait, no, they have Kyrie. But Kyrie only plays some games. So the games Kyrie can't play, let Ben be the point guard. But then when Kyrie does play, then what do you do with Ben? Right. And when Kevin Durant comes back, he likes to handle the ball. Right, so now what? Like, it's really confusing as to how they're going to utilize him. And I think they have the wrong coach to figure it out. Steve Nash has been a flop.
Really? I was going to say, is there, I think in basketball, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you're probably one of those like stats, you got them up here. But is there not something to say about the attempts at building super teams? Sometimes it has paid off, but like I think of the Lakers, and when you put too many stars on the same team, And it becomes like a clusterfuck of how to run plays with these guys, because their plays don't necessarily, correct me if I'm wrong, complement each other. Like, who gets the ball is going to determine the play. And if they all want the ball, how do you pull that off? Are the Nets about to have that problem?
Well, they've had that problem for the last year and a half.
Right. Well, right? That's true. That's true. And have they fixed that problem?
No, because the issue is the head coach. The issue really? Is the head coach. When you have a super team with ball dominant players that all want the ball, you have to have a coach that can get them to share the ball properly. That's right. Why Steve Kerr to me was so underrated with what he did in Golden State. When you had Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant, who all want 15 to 25 shots a night, mm-hmm. you got to find a way to keep them all happy and mm-hmm. not make your offense super predictable. Mm-hmm. The Nets with Harden, Kyrie, and KD were literally like, you take the ball. Okay, it's your turn. Now it's my turn. Now it's your turn. And it was just like a lot of one-on-one. And as amazing as those guys are as individual talents, when all you're doing is playing one-on-one, it's super easy to defend.
Right, right.
It's super easy to load up your defense, right? And, you know, it's like, I'm going to attack. If I can't go any further, I'm going to kick it out, and then someone's going to shoot. It's not a winning formula. They really need a coach that can come in and install a new system. I don't know
who can do it. Who can do it?
I mean,
who's up this year that could do it?
Who's up? I don't know. I think the problem the Nets have had, they did this before when they hired Jason Kidd, and that was a colossal mistake. Then they hire another former, you know, all-star NBA player.
It's the name brand of them,
man. Right. They want the name brand. They bring in guys with zero head coaching experience
because
the name brand, because we're in New York. We need a star.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, you got to bring up a guy who's been paying his dues as an assistant coach or at the G League, who's just ready, who's just ready, you know? And I think the Coach Popovich coaching tree has almost been tapped dry for a while. It's like everyone who gets a new head coach was one of Popovich's assistants. The one I would go for in a heartbeat if I was the Nets is Becky Hammon. Becky Hammon, to me, is one of the best coaches in the entire NBA and won't get a job because she's not a guy. And she
like,
that's
a weird name for a dude.
Yeah, she ain't a dude. And she just accepted a position that she's going to start at the end of this season with the WNBA as a head coach. And I'm like, the fact that she had to go to the WNBA to get a head coaching job is wrong. That's fucked up. She's a great coach. Great coach. Right.
Do you think it's, let me ask a question though. Do you think it's a matter, because to flip to another sport very quickly, you have a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs. Toronto Maple Leafs have not, nor are they going to win a Stanley Cup in quite some time. Okay. Yeah. However, they don't need to. Their fan base is there. They, you know what I mean? They're still making money. Are the Nets, because they're a Brooklyn team, are they of that same thing? Do they need to win championships because they have so many stars on their team? You know what I mean? That's the attraction of getting people out to play. And if they drop a couple of buckets, because really, I mean, it's a lot of corporate stuff during the week, and a lot of this stuff is played during the week. And are the Nets making money? Are they profitable? You know what I mean? That's really the question.
I think that they are, regardless if they're a winning or losing team, just because they're playing in New York, they have way too large a fan base. I mean, you know, that's the city of the New York Yankees and Mets. It doesn't matter if they have bad seasons or good, they're going to have their following and they're going to have their people show. To me, that's the sort of weird sort of like dichotomy of sports, is that if you have a major market like Toronto is, like New York is, and you have teams that aren't winning, just the very nature of the number of fans in that market, you're going to have support of that team. It'll wane a little bit here and there, but those aren't cities where your teams aren't going to get support. And I hate the fact that as a result, you're going to have this idea that winning doesn't matter because we're going to get fans anyways. You're not wrong. And that's long been the thing that they've said about the Leafs. And as a suffering Leafs fan, because I just am one of those can't cheer unless it's a Toronto team guys, it's like, insane to me that they don't just have a following, but I was reading that the Leafs are the richest team in the NHL by way of profitability, and the second place team I think is the Rangers, but they're off by tens of millions, bro. So it doesn't suggest, to your point, that we quote need a winning culture here, and it drives me nuts, man. I almost wish that the fans would go on strike.
Yeah, the problem is, like, that logic, I hear what you're saying, Dan, but that logic no longer really matters when you talk about the value of the franchise. It mattered 20 years ago or so, or 25 years ago, before the league had a cap. Before the league had a cap, the Leafs should have won a ton of cups in the 80s and 90s. They just should have. There is no excuse not to. They made the most money. They could have spent the most money. There was tons of Ontario-born players that would have loved to come home if you open up the purse strings. But during that whole era, you're correct, they were content to just turn a profit, give it to their shareholders, and you know, the building was always full, so why do more?
Right.
And now, that was my question. Do you think the Nets are the same way? Do you think that Brooklyn has that?
No.
Because they have these superstars that are drawn in the people, you know, to see them play.
You can't compare.
As long as they're turning a profit. Yeah.
It's apples and oranges because, first of all, the Nets are heavily in the luxury tax. They're heavily in the they're paying tens of millions of dollars. So the only way you can recoup that money is with a long playoff run and ticket sales. They have tens of millions in the luxury tax, and not only the money they would recoup from a long playoff run in ticket sales, but then there's the merchandise, the championship sweaters, the hats, the videos, the all of the ancillary shit that comes with
winners make money, of course.
That happens in hockey too.
Yeah, but the economics of the NHL and the NBA are apples and oranges. Like,
so then how would you explain what Tid is?
Your top
up?
Guys in the NHL make less than a end of the bench guy in the NBA. Like, it's just it doesn't compare.
I understand that there's levels to it, you know what I mean, and but it's still the same program either way, you know what I mean? Like, are the Brooklyn Nets just content with being that team that turns a bit of a profit and keeps everybody happy the same way that the, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs? They're not out there winning championships. They're just turning a profit to keep the shareholders happy enough so that they can just kind of keep the wheels turning.
No organization's ever going to admit that, for sure.
You're never going to see that in a situation where you have a taxed team. They're not incentivized to do anything but win. They're incentivized to win, and they're doing everything
So they legit suck.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you explain the Leafs' winless streak in terms of cups? How do you explain it? Because I understand what you're saying. Was it like it comes from the top down, right? Like the era that you're talking about is like the Ballard area, right?
Right.
Not era, and his you know, inability to want to.
Well, we're talking about two different things because, like I said, when you're talking about the 80s and the 90s, there's no excuse for the Leafs not having won multiple cups. There's just no excuse. It was just cheap asshole-ishness.
Right.
But the Ballard era. Right.
Yes.
I said, I agree with you. But today, you can't use that argument anymore in a league that has cost certainty and everything else.
So that's my point, is what's the explanation now?
Like, well, the explanation now is it's hard to win a championship. It's just
last year.
You know what? Last year, they had a great team. They should have gone a lot further, and they fell apart. You know, they constantly reinvent themselves. They constantly pull moves that you think, okay, This should do it. Mm-hmm. You know, they look good on paper. Last year, there was tons of experts that picked them to go to the Stanley Cup final and to win it. And they couldn't get out of the first round.
It's
painful. Winning a championship in any sport is hard. Mm-hmm. It's really fucking hard. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're talking about the amount of money that's on the table, when you get to have a deep run and you get to be successful, everyone's trying to do it, man. Everyone's trying to get their hands in that pie. And I just think that I think in baseball, you still see a lot of the, it's good enough. It's good enough. You know, there's a lot of that happens in baseball. The top teams, they're just like, you know, you look at your Yankees, your Dodgers, and they're like, what does that guy want? 100 million?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I've always hated that.
Because there's no hard cap in baseball. Teams can, the rich get rich. The middle class are still just, you know, on the treadmill, and the small market teams are fee-zucked. And that's just the way it is, you know?
And you need all those teams to make a league. So it's just the nature of the game, the nature of the business to the game.
And then you got the NFL where it's like small market, big market is irrelevant because of the profit sharing. And they have complete and total parity in that league where you could suck this year and next year you're in the conference finals. Right. Cause the nature you'd right to, because of the nature of the economics in football, you might have a really good team, but next year you can't afford to keep that team together. And you make a couple of key moves. You got to move pieces around the shell game. You got to do whatever. Next year, it's not quite as good, and someone else got a lot better. And now
the contracts are a little bit shorter, but the lifespan of the player is also shorter. So they're looking for to maximize it as fast as possible. So long-term deals just really aren't a thing. That's why you see so many football players, you know, move around so much too, right? Mm-hmm. So
Also, what you see in football is because the contracts aren't really guaranteed or protected. If a superstar player,
to an extent, they are.
Okay, but for the most part, a team can cut you in football, and you're just gone. That's right. It. Like, and if you had a signing bonus, great. But for the most part, it's out the door. See you later. You can't really do that in any of the other heavily unionized pro sports. You know, there's consequences to that shit to the team. So when a star player starts to suffer, they're like, okay, we better ride it out. We better make some moves, get some other guys around him, get a new coach. In football, they're like, fuck your hat. See you later. You know, we'll get somebody else. So the parity in the NFL is insane. Like insane. The way that teams just go up, go down, go up, go down, go up. Mm-hmm. Go down. Like, look at the Bengals. Where have the Bengals been for the last few years, right? In the toilet.
Well, sure. But then look at the Patriots. Look at when the Patriots are running a dynasty that in 20 years, they win 6 Super Bowls with the same quarterback.
That's because they had tons of transition, but they transitioned within their ranks, but they kept the couple guys that mattered, the coach and the quarterback.
They had a lot of restructuring. They did a lot of restructuring with a lot of guys' contracts to ensure them, listen, we're going to win another championship and we're going to pay you off at the back end because that's how we make our money, just like in all of those sports, as we were talking about with playoff runs and that. But we're going to need you to do us a solid. And all of them were like, yeah, if we're going to do this, then we're going to do this as a team. And that's why that dynasty was what it was for so long, I think. I don't think you're ever going to see that anymore because guys are like, nah, I got to get my money and get out. I got a lot of lawyer fees.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, live broadcasts have problems sometimes. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get a hold of this man when Tid and Dan were still here with us. But he was good enough to get a hold of us literally a minute after we went off the air. So, you know what? It's going to turn now into a one-on-one conversation. And it's time for my delayed big hello. This man is a returning guest. And he's one of my favorite people ever to interview because he has no filter. He's originally from Columbus, Ohio. He was the best high school player ever to come out of his school and is considered the best player in the history of his college program over at Ohio University. He was drafted to the NBA 11th overall in 1995 and had a great career playing for Portland, Toronto, Minnesota, and Dallas. These days, he's living the dream. My man's social media consists of him getting pedicures like once a week, showing off fresh clothes and giving his opinions on whatever hotel room he's sitting in. He's been traveling all over following his son, who's a star player for the Toronto Raptors. He's coming to us tonight from the streets of Houston, Texas, just minutes before he heads over to the Toyota Center for the game between the Rockets and the Raptors. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the man that Shaquille O'Neal once said he'd want having his back in a bar fight because he's the Shaq and the Mac taking it to the rack. Almost never wears a shirt on his back to disrespect and get your jaw cracked. This is Gary Trent. What's up, my man?
Hey, how you doing, man? Hey, you know what's funny? Yeah. I actually outside, so I was like, this gonna be the first time I got a shirt on.
All the years that I've interviewed you, you finally got a shirt on.
That's because I'm headed to the game and I'm outside.
Yeah. If you're at the beach, forget about it.
Oh no, that's gonna be my next one.
Yeah, how's the weather in Houston tonight,
man? Way better than Minneapolis. You know, it's like minus something or 5 degrees in Minneapolis. It was snowing when I left this morning, so this is perfect weather right here.
Well, listen, I know that you you're heading over to the game. Unfortunately, when we tried to have you on live tonight, you had some reception problems in your hotel. So,
man, I've been having them reception problems since you called me at like 4 o'clock.
When I called you this afternoon, I'm like, what is up with Trent's phone, man?
I think I'm in one of those corner rooms at the end. Yeah. And just that all that brick and mortar is just making it hard for a signal to work in there.
Forget about it, eh? Hey, man, I want to ask you right off the hop. You made some headlines this past week. I don't know how aware you are of the headlines you made, but they were everywhere. You did an interview with a Toronto radio station earlier in the week, and your quote has gone viral where you talked about your son, Gary Trent Jr., and you talked about how when Gary was playing for Portland, he was not happy. He was depressed, and he's so much happier now. And fans have been trying to understand what you meant by that. Was it that Junior wasn't happy with the city, that he wasn't happy with the coaches, that he wasn't happy with the on-court opportunities? Can you just set the record straight and explain exactly what you meant by that?
Well, the thing that I meant by that was, you know, my son was a very high-level high school player, McDonald's All-American and all of this.
Right.
He's never been in a situation in life where he was not in, not involved in part of the winning process. You know what I'm saying? And being in a situation in Portland, after you are the man all your life, now you come to Portland, you're in street clothes. You're not even allowed to play basketball.
Right.
So the number one thing in your life that you love, that you've always had, that you have been working 16, 17 years at, is just stripped away from you. And the sad part about it is, no matter what he did at practice, no matter what he did at games, no matter how hard you work, you're just not going to, you're not going to get that opportunity until someone's injured. You know, like, you're not going to be able to play in front of CJ's making $25 million. You're not going to play in front of Dame. So literally you're in street clothes, basically a Blazers fan. And one thing about life, man, when you are in a situation and you feel or see no light at the end of the tunnel and no hope, it becomes more and more depressing to you. So as my son sit there night after night, day after day, practice after practice, he could come into practice, go 100 for 100 from the floor, then he's still going back to street clothes tomorrow. So I always have my son standing on, you got to outwork the next guy. You got to beat that guy. You want that position, you got to beat him out. You got to beat him out. And that's how it's been all his life. In the NBA, it doesn't work like that. You could come in and dog a guy every day at practice. If he's making $20 million and you're making $1 million, or he's making $20 million, you're making $5 million, he's playing in front of you no matter what, no matter if you're better than him or not. And he couldn't grasp the concept of, how do I get playing time when the whole thing in life is outworking someone?
Right.
So, you know, night after night, you know, going to the game, it's like, imagine prepping every day. I'm going to shoot around. I'm going to practice. I'm going to games. And every time I show up to the game, it's like, no matter how much I prep, when I come to the game, I'm in street clothes. So it was feeling like, how do I ever get out of this? You know, so that took you to a twist as a youngster. But then, you know, when you get these opportunities, like, okay, somebody gets hurt, you'll play 2-3 games and you're back to the bench. So it's like, when you come out there to try to fall in love with the game, but knowing that in one more day or two more days, it's going to be taken away from you again, it's hard to love. It's like loving somebody, having somebody in your life that you know is going to be there Monday and Tuesday, but after Tuesday, they're going to be out of your relationship again. And maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, if somebody stubbed a toe, you could be back in love again. And it's hard to just all out pour your heart and love into it because it's going to consistently get hurt. And that's what I meant by my son was just sad and down. He loved the fans. The fans there loved him and supported him, but there was some shenanigans going on within the front office, certain things that was said to him about what he could never be.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of those type of things going on, what you won't be. You know, my son, you know, he was told by one front office person, hey, you just need to worry about rebounding. What are you going to do in the league as a rebounder? He never, y'all didn't draft him as a rebounder. He didn't go to Duke as a rebounder. He didn't make McDonald's as a rebounder. So, you know, when you got people telling him, oh, just worry about rebounding, don't worry about that. You know, he was even told, you went to the G League and averaged almost 40. You know, he was told people don't care about the G League. It's just there. So don't even, that'll never translate to the NBA. He was told that to his face, disrespectfully, by certain individuals in the front office. So it's like, I'm working, and I'm not getting that opportunity. And as I work, you're telling me my work means nothing. So, you know, it was best for him to leave that place. And there's a lot of people that's, you know, changing over there and whatnot. So I'm sure they're going to change the culture. They got Chauncey there with a new life and a breath of fresh air. So, you know, it's Portland's making a turn for the better. And, you know, sometimes you got to clean people out in order to make that. But that was where that came from as far as my son's pain.
I appreciate you being so candid, but I expect nothing less, man. You have no filter and you're always a straight shooter. So I really appreciate that.
You don't have to. The reason I don't have no filter is because I'm not going to filter the truth. That's why I'm not in the media lying. I'm not on social media lying.
But you know how it is, man. People are afraid to be honest. People are afraid to hurt feelings and be honest.
I'm not. If my truth hurts you, if my truth hurts you, so what? And I'm going to laugh at you because that means you live in a fake space in life. And I'm not joining that fake space with you. So if my truth hurts you, so what?
I think you made a comment last year when you came on our show, and it was just, you know, days after Junior got acquired by the Raptors. And I remember thinking to myself, man, this is a hell of a pickup. This kid's really good. But if you look at him from that point last year, March 2021 until today, I know you feel he's always been this guy. He just needed opportunity, but he's better. Like, he looks better now. And I don't know if it's just opportunity or if he is really focused on certain parts of his game. Am I nuts?
It's a combination of things. It was, first off, you would never see this without the opportunity. And to me, my son will be better with more opportunity. What I mean by that, you're getting used to the system. This is your first, well, this is not even a full season with these guys. You know, you can tell when they play that this was a core group of guys, and my son's still trying to fit in with that, with the Freddie, OG, and Pascal. You could tell he's, you know, those guys were part of that core. They've been here. So he's actually still trying to fit into that. And, you know, it's to make himself a deadly option within those guys and for what the team is trying to build. But I think, to be honest with you, man, this summer, when you see my son work and watch him come back next year, I believe next year will be the best year of his basketball career.
During the entire Masai Ujiri era.
Will call. I'll go right here. Hold on. Thank you. That's all good. Thank you, man. Yeah, I'm just hopping out this Uber, man. They're going again.
All good, buddy.
All right. Now I'm back on the streets.
So I was going to say, during the whole Masai Ujiri era in Toronto, they've been credited as having one of the best developmental systems, right? They have a lot of guys that were undrafted or guys that were lower draft picks that have turned out to be really, really important players and guys that were part of the championship team. Do you feel that Toronto's developmental system has helped Junior to help reach the next level? Do you think
I think part of it is the system, and part of it is you seeing everything that he had in his bag, you're seeing him be able to display it with an opportunity to display it.
Right.
You know, there's a, you know, to be honest with you, man, if you're really guy from 7 to 15 on the roster, it's a lot of people that are dealing with that lack of playing time opportunity, wanting more because the minutes are slotted. Everything is slotted. So there's a lot of guys that's dealing with what my son dealt with in the league. I had dealt with it. Talk to any guy that's like 7 on down. If you care about the game, you love the game, and you want to be something, it should hurt you. If it don't hurt you, you shouldn't be in the game. If you leave the game and you play 4 or 5 minutes and you're not thinking, damn, what can I do to get better? Or, man, I can't wait to my opportunity. If you're not feeling like that, if you're not feeling sad, if you don't feel some hurt out of that, you shouldn't be in the game. Because that's the only way you can play hard, play intense, and be focused. You got to have a certain level of passion within yourself.
The deadline was crazy today. All kinds of big names that were moving everywhere on trade deadline day. What do you think of the Raptors getting a new teammate for Junior? Thaddeus Young comes to Toronto. What do you think?
I think, you know, they're going to add some pieces. You know, I think what the Raptors are doing as far as rebuilding and adding pieces here and there, and they're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kept your core group of guys who understand how to win and know how to win. And I think they're getting better, too. You know, Freddie making an all-star, that's big. You know, somebody that can emerge and lead and, you know, and be an example for, some younger guys.
before you fly, and I know you got to go, I want to play a quick game with you, man. Last time you were on this show, I mentioned a bunch of different names of guys you used to play with, and I said, tell me your first thought when I mentioned that guy's name. This time, okay. I want to flip it. I'm going to give you a scenario, and you give me the name that comes to mind, whether it's a teammate, opponent, or someone that's in the league right now.
Okay.
All right. Most likely to pick up the bill for the whole table. Who is it?
Garnett.
Least likely to pick up the bill for the table.
Me.
Me. Who's the last man standing at the bar?
Oh, Spree.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Who's the guy that always smelled the worst on the court?
Oh, I don't think we had nobody like that on the squad, because you definitely would have been roasted to the point where after one day of that, you would have got roasted to the point you would have changed that up quick. So I don't really got nobody for that one.
Not even an opponent? Not even an opponent?
Oh, man.
Come on,
man. You know, sometimes guys just – I can't think of nobody specific that I just really stunk on the court. Maybe his game, but I, you know.
Who's the guy that was most likely to run and check his stats after a blowout loss when those stats don't fucking matter?
Oh, shoot.
Come on.
Man.
Come on. I know you got a name in your head.
No, I ain't got nobody for that one. I ain't got nobody. It's more than likely, though, what's going to happen, that's going to be, honestly – no individual. It's probably going to be a young guy trying to up and coming, or maybe some guy on a 10-day or right. Somebody like coming up from the G League, because he want to be like, man, I got my thing off tonight. So I don't think it's a selfish thing. It's just somebody really finally getting an opportunity and real thirsty and happy about it. You know what I'm saying? Because I was like that at some time. We might lose. I look at the stat sheet like, man, I had 18-9. I was 8 of 6 from a 6 of 8 from the floor. So it was a good night for me, even in a loss, because you're young and you're trying to find your way. So that right there could be a lot of players.
Who's the guy you don't want to sit next to on a plane?
Probably Shaq. Ain't no room, man. You know what I'm saying? Listen, because I was flying when I was flying back from Toronto.
Uh-huh.
Man, it just so happened I'm 270. The guy they put next to me was 300. I'm like, yo, and it was a three seats in a row. So I'm like, yo, how you find the three widest back guys and put us on the plane? But here was the lucky thing. Something was wrong with the plane. We had to get off the plane and then go to another gate and get on a different plane. And in the process of that, the lady moved us around. Because I was nice. Like, yo, you got like, it's 900 pounds of people in this row. You know what I'm saying? Straight up.
Who do you know from the league most likely to be shook by trash talk?
Ooh. Shook by trash talk.
It really got under his skin.
When he was younger, it was probably Pal. I used to trash talk him a little bit, Gasol, when he was younger. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times you can, you know, he's a foreigner. So, you know, he wasn't really, you know what I'm saying, really gritty like that. You know, once he got older and got his confidence. But early on, you know, my thing was this. Anytime I was in a game and I, like, got angry and I screamed at somebody, like, don't push in my back no more, any type of activity to punk you. If I get a grown man in the middle of a game speaking to me in soprano, I know I got you. When I say, push in my back again, you blah, blah, blah. And they'd be like, man, I ain't even pushing in your back with it. When you go to the high soprano voice, I know you're a chump and I got you.
Who's most likely to be at the strip club till closing after a win?
Ooh, shit, all of us. All of us.
I ain't talking about anybody that's
coming with me afterwards.
I ain't talking about a championship. I'm talking about a regular ass season game, man. You got to play.
Me too. Me too. Let us be coming from Minnesota. We you know, we got a couple days in Houston or Miami. You know what I'm saying? We there.
Gary Trent never turns down a good party. Hey, listen. Next time you come to Toronto to come see Junior play, holler at your boy, okay? All right. We'll do it up.
Appreciate it, man. I'm about to go in this game, man. Hopefully we get a big one tonight by 20 or something.
Hey, man, you got more of the three of us, baby.
Is that a good thing?
That's what she wanted.
Actually, got more thing? Of the two of us because Donnie spent
yeah,
like
it's true.
The show.
I spent the whole show on my phone.
We worked overtime, bro. Well done, Tid. Always, always a good time to be your tag partner, brother.
On behalf of Notorious TID, Chris Tidwell, my bro Danny O, thanks to all of you for tuning in and sticking with us. My name is Donnie DeSilva. We'll see you next time.